these stories that we're getting, like, you know, I go back to the men's basketball season and the city, you know, I wouldn't say they're huge David Lipscomb fans, but, you know, as far as watching Lipscomb's run in the NIT, people are paying attention. But one of the things that we can seem to count on year in and year out, run by the Vandy boys, and certainly their backs were against the wall after Friday night. No hit performance from Kumar Rocker on Saturday, getting the job done early on Sunday. And so here we are again, fourth appearance since over the last 9 years in the College World Series for Vanderbilt and Tim Corbin's group.
Yeah, and this is the time of year I love, because you know me, I'm a baseball person first and foremost. And I actually followed Vandy years before I came here. That's just what a national program he's built all over the country, because you know I'm from the West Coast and I knew all about Vanderbilt baseball. So coming here and being able to cover them firsthand has been a treat for me, not only because Tim Corbin and his wife Maggie are first class, but the way that he is developing these young men into not only being professional baseball players or whatever they go on to do in life, but they're good human beings. And I mean that with all sincerity, because I've really gotten to know a lot of those guys within the program. So I just think this is such an exciting time for not only Vanderbilt, but for the city of Nashville, because I think sometimes it's hard. We have the professional teams here, and you don't hear a lot about Vandy during the regular season, but this is a time where there's not a lot going on. So why not put the focus on them, because they deserve it? And I think we're all kind of getting behind them as they head to Omaha for the first time in 4 years.
I get a chance to visit with Tim Corbin every week during the baseball season. So this journey started in February. Am I surprised that they're in this position this year? No, not at all. And it's interesting when you look at a season. I was throwing out some stats yesterday on the show, and I went back 16 weekends, right? Until Friday night, they were 16-0 on weekend openers. 16-0 before losing to Duke on Friday night. In, you know, because even in the weekends where they dropped two out of three, they did it to Texas A&M in mid-March, and then the first weekend of April when they were on the road at Georgia, they still started off those weekends with victories. It's a group that their longest losing streak, and it happened twice this year, their longest losing streak, just two games. And it was those two weekends that I'm referring to. Other than that, you know, we're talking about a very consistent baseball team throughout the year.
Well, I was just going to say that. They've been the definition of consistency. And anybody who knows baseball in general, it's a long season. The hardest thing is to find consistency. And I've just been so impressed with what they've been able to do the entire season. And now in the postseason, and I think we were all a little shocked when they lost that game to Duke. Not so much that they lost the game, but the way they lost the game. But hey, it says more about the team, the way they responded and were able to come out. Kumar Rocker had that incredible performance, but then for the offense to really just get back on track after a couple of games and do what they've done the entire season. So I'm not shocked at all by how they responded. I just think it goes to show the veteran leadership on this team, but not only that, the way that these younger players have listened to the veterans. And Tim Corbin said it to me so many times this year, I've kind of put it in the seniors' hands to lead, and they've been doing an amazing job.
I mean, look at these records month by month so far this year for Vanderbilt baseball. Month of February, 6-2. In March, 16-4. In April, 13-3. In May, 15-1. And so far in the month of June, 4-1.
Yeah, I mean, can you believe those numbers? I mean, it's incredible. And I think that I had read a stat, too, during the regular season at least. They were leading like three or four categories in the SEC. And, Johnny, the SEC is the dominant conference right now in college baseball. They have four teams that are in the College World Series. I mean, this is a conference that has a lot of good teams, and Vandy has still been able to maintain really the top rankings of everything with when it comes to these other teams. So it just goes to show you what they've been able to do this season. And it just, you know, I think there's a lot that goes into it. The seniors went through a lot their freshman year, and I think they wanted to prove something. They, you know, were bounced from the Super Regionals last year, and this is the way that they wanted to respond, and they've been able to do it.
Yeah, you mentioned the SEC. In the World Series bracket that Vanderbilt's a part of, both brackets, top and bottom, it's a double elimination with the four teams involved. Mm-hmm. In Vanderbilt's bracket, three of the four teams are from the SEC. You've got Vanderbilt, Auburn, Mississippi State, Louisville, which is Vanderbilt's first opponent on Sunday, is from the ACC. Mm-hmm. But three of the four in Vanderbilt's bracket, all from the SEC.
Yeah, it's impressive. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and I'm embarrassed to be from the Pac-12 anymore because they've completely diminished in terms of, I'm not going to get into the other sports, but I'm going to talk specifically about college baseball because they used to be really dominant too when it came to that, and they had no teams in the College World Series, including the outs of number one UCLA. So now Vanderbilt holds, really, they're the top seed now in the tournament.
Now, you can, if you want, and I like to knock on the Pac-12 just because it's fun, especially since they haven't been very good top to bottom in football or men's basketball lately, especially when in football, because they always like to knock on the SEC for playing eight conference games while they play nine. And then you look at their non-conference games and go, yeah, it's so bad that your own students won't even go to the games. But I digress from that conversation. But I was going to say, in all fairness to the Pac-12, they did have the reigning World Series champs in Oregon State that went down this year.
They got knocked out in their own region.
I understand. I understand.
Come on, Johnny.
Well, when you sell your soul to the devil like Oregon State has done, so, you know, I always called it pedophile U because they don't really seem to care about things like that as long as they're winning games, more power to them. So that's another story for another day. We won't get on that topic. We've covered that enough on the show. Hey, let's talk a little Tennessee Titans minicamp this week, mandatory minicamp. They'll take a break, and then everybody will report back the latter part of July. I've said this before, you know, and you look, the players say all the right things about Marcus Mariota, but every chance that the players have to see Marcus Mariota perform, he needs to be on. And in all indications today, that was, certainly was not the case.
Yeah, it's hard. I don't even want to know what it's like to be a guy in his position right now in a contract.
Oh, I would absolutely love to be to know what it's like to be in his position, because Kayla, if you fail this year, you don't get the ratings, you do terrible sports reports, they fire you, you're walking away with $20 million. I would love to have that problem, Kayla.
Yeah, I've been laid off a couple times.
And did you get $20 million? Yeah, I don't think you
no,
have the
$20 million. Yeah. Bucks. But I think if you love what you do, and I know Marcus loves football, I think it's hard because you do, you know, when it comes down to it, you love football, and I'm sure he loves playing for the Tennessee Titans. But when it comes down to it, he's got to perform this year, and he knows that. I think it's now, like, we just need to see it happen, right? And he's going to go through times where he's not going to have good days at camp. He's not going to have a perfect game every game, too. The thing is can he be consistent enough, though, to win games? And that's what we need to see out of him. But I think it's funny, though, now, because he is going to be under a microscope. And that means every practice. And that means every game, right?
I like the conversation. Oh, Ryan Tannehill, he understands his role. He's the backup quarterback. And I was joking about this recently with Joe Rexroad. He's the backup quarterback until, oh, he's not. So my point is, the NFL, it's a business, and they say all the right things. Oh, he's our franchise QB. He's this and this. You get off to the 0-3 start in the month of September, and Ryan Tannehill's looking good in practice. Oh, hello, Ryan. How about you take the – let's just have a different look. Let's allow Marcus to look from the sidelines and view and see what you can do for us.
Well, I don't think you're too far off there, because – there's a reason why they brought in a backup that had that much experience that has been a starter, because I think they know that there could be some questions with Marcus. You just never know with his health. I mean, I can't sit there and bet on that guy to play a whole season, Johnny. And so that's the thing. I think they know now that they have at least a backup that is solid, that can probably come in and hold things together for a while. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't doubt it if he could play just as good as Parcus could.
I don't, you know, and I don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do. You can help here. Do the Tennessee Titans have anybody involved as far as from the mental standpoint of getting prepared? Not just cute little cliches where we're going to be great this year, not good, we're going to be great. No, I'm talking about really talking about the mental toughness aspect of it and having a professional from that standpoint helping the players. Do you know? Because I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, from everything that I've understood with organizations, they usually do have some sort of, like a psychiatrist type of person. Now,
right.
I don't know if that's somebody who's a motivator. But I do know that there's people that, you know, these players can go to when things are crazy or, you know, they're going through an injury and trying to come back and their mind's not in the right place. So I know that those people definitely exist, but that's a good question about like the motivating factor of somebody on a team. Do they have somebody who they bring in once in a while? Probably, but is it an everyday thing?
Well, is the thing. You hit the nail on the head why I brought it up, because you know, near the end of his second season, end of 2015, the Titans were rolling. Was it 15 or 16? I forget now. 16, I think. So they go down, controlling their own destiny as far as the AFC South, and they lose on Christmas Eve against Jacksonville. But Marcus Mariota suffers the fracture. He's out.
Yeah.
He has not been the same quarterback since then. And the reason I bring it up is you can say, well, see, all these other injuries that he suffered. Yes, but the part I'm getting to is how much did that injury also impacted his play over the last couple of years?
I think it always impacts your play. I mean, look what happened to Kevin Durant last night, right? I mean, he's injured again. Even when he comes back, I think there's going to be hesitation, and there always is a little hesitation in players with injuries, with reoccurring injuries. And on top of it, I think Mariota is just from a different culture, right? He's from a laid-back culture, from a culture where you don't always get that, you know, we're giving you feedback every minute. We're in a market where we're, you know, chirping at you every minute. And that's not where he's come from. He's come from a very laid-back kind of culture. And so I think for him, it's really finding the way to deal with it, with the injuries and moving on and being able to play with that not in the back of your mind.
By the way, you brought up injuries. I was talking about this earlier in the show. Bob Myers, the GM for the Warriors, you know, addressing the media. And one of the things that he said at the end, he goes, the initial injury was a calf injury. This is not a calf injury. I'm not a doctor. I don't know how those are related or not, but it's a different injury. This is where maybe, just maybe, you should have had a conversation. Look, I'm a media relations guy, right? I worked years in sports. I know the Achilles tendon is associated with the calf muscle. And
with
in fact,
calf.
It connects the two calf muscles.
Yep.
If you're going to be talking to the media about a key injury, decision-making, and all that, maybe you should have had the knowledge when it went down to talk to your trainers to figure out exactly what happened, at least have some information about what happened instead of sounding like a stupid idiot.
Yeah, I think the whole thing was not – just everything with the KD injury has been shady. I mean, we really didn't know anything. I actually thought he would not come back. That was my thought at the beginning of this series. So I was actually surprised when he did come back, and clearly he was not ready to come back. And they messed that up with the organization and just the way that they've gone about it with the media. Because now it looks like, okay, now it's an Achilles, you know, and everyone's like, well, what happened? It's a mess. It wasn't really planned out very well in terms of how to communicate it.
If one is weakened, that means it also creates the opportunity for another part that's all connected to be weakened as well.